Michael? Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, hold on.
Okay.
I just need to know how to get sound.
Okay.
How do I get sound?
It should be at the bottom of the screen.
Jennifer, you don't know how to, do you know how to get sound on this thing?
If you put the cursor toward the bottom.
On the bottom. I got it. Wait, hold on. Let's see.
Can you hear me now? I hear you, by the way.
I got it.
You got it? Okay, great. Okay, awesome. Susan.
Right, so I have to preface with this. To say that I'm so glad to say Tracy's here because I didn't get to finish the story and I thought it was going to kind of be a boring discussion.
Uh-huh. Oh, it can't be. It's a totally amazing story. So no worries about the discussion.
Although, I want to hear what Alana has to say.
Of course. That goes without saying. But I didn't want her to be given a sermon.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't want to be given, have you guys had that cold? You know, the one that's going around. Oh my
no.
God.
You obviously had it.
I have it. And so, yeah, so if we, yeah, not fun.
Can we'll you see. Make it?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to run and get a fork real quick. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a fork. Tracy, but keep going. Go ahead and start.
Are you at home?
Go ahead. No, I'm at the day school.
Yeah, no, I was talking to Tracy.
Oh, okay, Tracy.
What did you ask me?
Are you at home?
I am.
Ah, good.
That's what I am on Tuesdays.
That's I'm awesome.
Trying to get up and work on my iPad, you know, see you on my iPad and be up in my room.
Oh, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Good.
Having just played pickleball, Susan's not hearing me, but I played pickleball at the JCC.
Oh, good.
It's right up my alley. You know, I had my ankle replaced.
Yeah.
And so I did talk the doctor into letting me play social tennis, but he don't know what the hell social tennis is.
That, right, like right.
So I try to play social pickleball, which is a smaller court, and, you know, anyway.
Which is great. It's really great.
If you're working on eye-hand coordination and you're having fun and you're semi-competitive, you know, it takes the place. It's fine.
Yeah. No, my mother is an avid pickleball player. She just
oh, really?
Loves the game. Oh, totally. They moved here a couple of weeks ago, and she moved into one of these continuous care places. She's got half the place playing pickleball now. It's really... really funny. Okay, let us begin. Purim night. Let me preface this by saying, you know, and maybe I've said this many times, but this has to be one of the most extraordinary stories she's written. And one of the things that's extraordinary about it is that it's a play within a play. You know, it's about an evening of Purim. It's a story about an evening of Purim. And then it is the Purim story happening again. But we'll see all of this. Okay. Camp Grünwasser. What's Grünwasser? Green water.
Green water.
Yes. Yucky, yucky, yucky. So we know already, you know, if we didn't know it was a displaced persons camp, we'd know already that it was kind of not the kind of water you want to be near. Was preparing for Purim, that merry celebration when you must drink until you cannot distinguish the king from the villain, the queen from the village tart. Purim? Ludwig inquired. He was 12, pale and thin, like all the others. But Ludwig had been pale and thin before, during his pampered early boyhood in Hamburg. While hiding out with his uncle, he had failed to become ruddy and fat. Okay, guys. What is before with a capital B?
Yeah, it is. Before the war. I love how they do that. She does that.
Okay. So in this story particularly, she is going to use capital letters in a very, very important way. Because before is a world that is gone. After is a world that's continuing, but it's the war that's continuing. Because they're still in the DP camps and they're still, you know, on, you know, rations and things like that. So the after is continuing, but the before, hey Lynn, before, that is another world and that is gone. And so that's why it's before with a capital B. It's the life that was. But it also tells you that Ludwig would've been pale and thin anyway. So don't think it's because he was in a concentration camp or because of this. However, we hear that he was hiding out. And then Edith Perlman says, while hiding out with his uncle, he had failed to become ruddy and fat. What is she doing in that sentence? He was unsuccessful in gaining weight at that time. I mean, that is absurd, right? If he's hiding out, probably in a hole place, you know, he would be lucky if he's not starving. The idea of he wasn't successful at becoming ruddy and fat. It's by understatement, it kind of packs the punch. Purim is a holiday, Sonia said. She was 56, also pale and thin by nature. She had spent the war in London. Now she was co-director of this camp for displaced persons. What a euphemism. Fugitives from cruelty, they were. Homeless, they were. Despised. Purim celebrates the release of the Jewish people from a wicked man. Release? Released by the Allied forces? No, no. This was in Shushan long ago. Okay. So what do we have here?
Well, later we realize that he's just like egging her on. He already knows the story and yes. He's playing dumb. And, you know, so it's fun when you've already read it and now you're discussing it.
Yes. So Ludwig plays a lot of chess and he knows about making moves and how important it is to anticipate the future. And the kid survived. And what that means is that he had to be able to, in some ways, or with his uncle, think three moves down the line in terms of his behavior. And so so this is one of his moves, play dumb. And it's a good one. It's a good one. But we have war with a capital W. We have camp for displaced persons with a capital C, D, and P. What's the thing we're gonna hear in a little bit that Ida was the secretary, a person with a capital P, who had been a milliner before. Okay. Why is she using the capital P? A person.
I love it.
What does it mean?
It's sort of anonymous in some respect. It's a person. But at the same time, they have been so dehumanized that to give them a capital P is like raising them up. So, it goes both ways.
Yes, but that's the thing. It goes both ways. When you say somebody is is in a DP camp, she's a person with a capital P, you're actually saying she's nobody because you're not saying her name. And you know you're her name, because this is not the war anymore. And you can see people as individual people, not as part of some mass of people who are only known by numbers, right? These people have names, they had lives. And so she was a milliner before in that lost world. So that capital thing, on the one hand, it reminds us that, of course, she is a person. She created in the image of God. On the other hand, the people who are running, not Sonia, but the people above her, the military that is now running all of the DP camps, to them, the displaced persons are still anonymous. They're not, mother, sister, brother, and so on. And Sonia tells us, fugitives from cruelty, that it's a euphemism, right? It's a camp for displaced persons, right? And we're gonna see that Sonia and Roland are co-directors of the camp. When you say co-directors of a camp, you think, Camp Stein, Camp Barney. And of course, this is so completely other. What's the Shushan Shushan long ago?
It's her song that she remembers.
Right, so it's a song, but I don't think, if we had somebody who was on this phone call who was a 20-year-old, 25-year-old, who had gone to day school and been through the Jewish world, they would not know this song. Because this song was contemporary in 50s, 60s, and then it went out of singing. People don't sing it anymore. So it kind of, it gives you a little bit of hint.
Yeah.
That Edith Perlman. Okay, so turn to the next page. Ludwig's was the pedantic German of a precocious child. Sonia's was the execrable German of an American with no talent for languages. The use of the word execrable there is just perfect, right? Her Yiddish was improving at Camp Grunewasser, though. Yiddish was the camp's lingua franca, cigarettes its stable currency. So what does it tell you, what is she saying when she says Yiddish is the lingua franca and cigarettes is the currency?
That's the common language. And you didn't have money, you had cigarettes to barter.
Okay, so it's the common language. It may also be the language that American officials who are hopping around don't understand. And sometimes that's useful. And the currency, what it tells you is that they have a culture. They have a culture, they have an economy, they have language, and they have currency. So even within this DP camp, they've created a little world there and are surviving and continuing. Shushan, 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 Ludwig repeated, a place of three names. And here is where it's that beautiful child's mind that takes everything very, very literally, my favorite example of that, which I'm sure I've shared here, is that picture of a car driving away from a bunch of trees, and there's a driver and a passenger in the car, and the caption is, God driving Adam out of the Garden of Eden. right? Driving, because it's driving. So if he says Shushan, 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 you know, he goes, he thinks it's three, right? Okay. Skip down to the bottom. He was scurrying off when Ida, wait, Ida was the secretary, a person who had been a milliner before. I will tell you about Purim. You should know, a Jewish boy like you. Now, what we're going to hear is this will be the first of probably five times, four or five times that Ludwig is going to hear this story from different people. What is that going on there?
He's playing dumb all the way around every time. So he can, I mean, it's his way, not just of finding the story, but finding the direction these other people are coming from.
Okay, so that's it. What he understands is the need to tell this story may be for him, but it's also for them because they insist on telling the story. And that's what we do, you know, when we are, this is going to be a story of liberation. It's going to be a story of redemption. It's a love story. It's many things. But this is going to be a story of redemption. And our paradigm for redemption is, the Exodus from Egypt and, and what is it with the Exodus from Egypt? We're commanded to tell the story, right? V'higata telavincha. Haggadah means the telling, you know, so the story is key. He paused mid-flight, eyes wide as if under a searchlight. You know, so on the one hand, he's not being held by the Germans. On the other hand, the war is very much still continuing for him, as if under a searchlight. And we're gonna see a little bit later where Ludwig thinks that, you know, the feverish Jewish studies teacher who tells the Purim story once, Ludwig ruminates to himself that he will be in the next X-ray roundup, right? The roundup, you know, this is medical care becomes a roundup because the child has to, we saw that agonizing, the child being separated from the group and so on. So the war, through her language, through her use of language, is continuing. And she's so amazing at that. And now, the word that is the leitmotif of the story, the top of 185. There was a king, Ahasuerus, and a general, Haman, and Mordechai, a wise Jew, who spent his time by the gates of the palace. King Ahasuerus' queen offended him, so he called for a new queen, Mordechai, and she used an unfamiliar word. Sonia ruffled through her German-English dictionary. Procured? I'm not sure. Procured his niece, Esther, said Ida, her dark eyes insistent. Mordechai refused to bow down. To Haman. Haman arranged to murder the Jews. Esther, a queen now, urged Ahasuerus to stop the murder. The Jews were saved. Procure? Sonia still objected, and Ludwig still pinned to the wall. It was a miracle then. A miracle, nodded Ida. I do not believe in miracles, especially miracles accomplished by the fuck. Okay. The word procure is going to come back again and again. What does it mean to procure?
It's like to requisition. It's to obtain.
Or arrange to obtain.
Yes. And often you have to get it, you know, when you're procure, you know, when you say procurement in a company, you might be talking about supply chains and things like that, but it depends on the approval and of other people, right? And so that's the key thing here. Procuring, we're going to see, is actually the instrument of redemption. But it's very much within this framework of some things that are gotten straight and some things that are gotten on the sly. And both are totally legitimate. Okay, what does he mean when he says, I don't believe in miracles, especially the miracles accomplished by the fuck? So funny.
I mean, I was just knocked off my feet by that statement. Circle in the story.
Yes, yes. So, you know, he learns a four-letter word. But then she explains it, that the kind of lovemaking he's seen is not, you know, but what is the miracle that is accomplished? Like, what is he talking about? Is he talking about that sometimes survival depended on exchanging sex for your life, right? Or sometimes getting food involved, you know, the fuck? You know, and getting food would have been a miracle, but, and so on. And so Ludwig, who is a real skeptic, God bless him, you know, he's saying, you know, I've seen some of these things. But the fuck, at least metaphorically, is going to be, which is a procurement of sorts, procuring sex, is going to save the day. So, let's keep going. Okay. Turn to page 186 in the middle. So they're going to have a Purim party, and they're going to have hamantaschen baked from sawdust that they call flour, right? You know, something. And they have like a tiny bit of blackberry jam, and Sonia gets so frustrated when there's not enough jam. Sonia could not procure sufficient tin milk, however. As for the meal preceding the party, it would consist of the usual dreck, watery spinach soup, potatoes, and black bread. Eisenhower had decreed that the displaced person camps be awarded 2,000 calories per person per day. Decent of him, but the general couldn't keep count of newcomers. They came in so fast. Okay. So Sonia's job, and Ida with her, is to procure on behalf of the population in the camp. And the Americans, as you know, the Americans are trying to do, you know, are being very generous. 2,000 calories a day. Give these people, you know, food. Except that, you know, the people who are okaying the procurements don't know the situation really on the ground in the DP camps. Those people are coming in faster. You can't give somebody 2,000 calories a day or somebody won't be able to eat. So, 187 at the top. Sonia, came the voice of Roland. He followed his voice into the office, his eyes flickering over the beauteous Ida and coming to rest on Sonia's narrow visage. Sonia, the Hasids in the north building refused to share their Megillah. They boycotted the general service. And then Ida adds, the Enlightenment Society also boycotted, Ida remarked. They held a seminar on Spinoza, the blackberry jam. There's so little of it. God damn, said Sonia. She was subject to sudden ferocity these days. Okay, so what's happening here with the Megillah and Purim and all of that?
You know, it's the multiplication of synagogues in a community. They all have their way and they're not going to, you know, go the other person.
That's right.
Exactly. God. Jews are being Jews. And actually, frankly, that's something that's good to hear because they can actually afford, you know, like that's actually a luxury to be able to say, we're going to have our own seminar, you know.
I also like the fact that the issue of the Megillah is equal to the blackberry jam, that they're all equal.
Yes, yes.
They're all equal terrible problems.
Yes, yes. So you have the religious, you have the secular enlightened, you have the people who are trying to put food on the table.
Right.
And what we know about Sonia is that she's very even-tempered. Right? Very even-tempered. So for her to be subject to sudden ferocity, you know, but then Ida, it was the change Ida told her knowingly though I myself was only 35. So Ida, of course, like all Holocaust survivors, are way older than their age for what they've seen. But she thinks, and it may be true that, you know, that Sonia's going through menopause and this accounts for that. Or it may be at a certain point, Sonia learned how to get angry, you know, not too angry. I mean, she's not.
She's certainly in a situation where that would make sense.
Yes. Yes. So now here's the real anger. Roland, it's all right, Sonia called after him. The kindly German farmers, they will certainly butcher some calves for our party. She was in the doorway now, but he had rounded the corner. Whipped cream will roll in like syrup, he raised her voice, though he was surely out of earshot. General Eisenhower, he will personally attend. So she's joking. Of course, there's an edge to it, you know? And what's the edge?
That really nobody cares about him.
Right. And nobody's going to send anything.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, they're lucky if they can procure through some, you know, miracle stuff that they need. But there's something else too. Whipped cream will roll in like surf. You know, there's a prophetic saying that, you know, that says, something will roll like a mighty river. No, justice will roll like a mighty river. And, and knowledge of God will fill the ocean, right? Will fill the seas. This is the prophet Isaiah in his ecstatic. He's envisioning, a redeemed world. And so whipped cream will roll in like the surf. Yeah, that too would symbol a kind of redemption. You know, that is like so far, that's Mashiach will come when we have whipped cream rolling in. Okay. About Purim, Ludwig had dissembled. Feigning ignorance was always a good idea. Know-it-alls, he'd observed, tend to get beaten up or otherwise punished. In fact, he'd already heard the story of Esther several times. Turn to the next page, 188. So we have the telling of the guy who's going to get caught in the X-ray roundup. And then we have the telling in the schoolroom. And then we have the telling in Yiddish and Russian and Hebrew. And his version, a droning bore in all three languages, insisted that the Lord, not Esther, had intervened to save the Jews. So is it the Lord or is it Esther? Well, yes, right? A day later, the philosophy professor referred to the story as a metaphor. Metaphor, inquired Ludwig, and presently learned the meaning of the term. He is a quick study. He saw that people who are know-it-alls get in trouble, you know, and he will never put himself out there. He learns immediately, and he loves learning. He liked to hang around the office because Roland, without making a big thing of it all, let fall so many bits of knowledge, farted them out like a horse. Sonia, too, was interesting. Okay, but middle of the next page. The first indentation. Even without the story, Ludwig would have noticed Purim. The persons in the camp, those who were not disabled, paralyzed with despair, stuck in the TB hospital, too old, too young, and by some mistaken assignment, Christian, the persons were loud.
Are y'all hearing her or hearing me?
Are you back? Yeah, you're back.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was it? Right. Occupied with the holiday. Right. So the persons in the barracks rooms. So now this tells us where they were. We're going to hear that the Wehrmacht. Their main celebration room was a stable for the German.
Or
Air Force, right? So sour and thin. Oh, persons were exchanging cigarettes and candy bars for the local wine. Sour and thin, sneered Uncle Claude, who hid among his belongings a bottle of cognac procured God knew how. We don't know how he got the cognac, but when you procure something, you hide it. Because you have a lot of experience doing that. Uncle Claude smoked most of his cigarette allotment and also Ludwig's, so he rarely had anything to barter. And Ludwig gets a thimbleful. So Purim is in the air, and why? What is it about the story of Purim that everybody wants Claude and the other children and themselves to know? What is it about the Purim story that, in this case, could be tremendously cathartic, actually?
Because so, they win.
Yeah, because the Jews win. This is, Purim is our fantasy of Jewish power before the State of Israel. In other words, in the majority of Jewish history, we get our butts kicked. You know, we get schmeiced. But in the book of Esther, we win and we take vengeance on our enemies, right? I mean, it's not a pretty thing, but it's like kind of farcical because of the numbers. But we get to take revenge on our enemies. And I imagine that must have, and who's the Haman on the wall? Every Haman has a little black mustache, right? So there's something about reading the Megillah, that is, should I say nourishing, healing, something. But it's powerful. They owned a board. Okay, go to 190. So this Litvak is the guy who they're borrowing the chess pieces from, and he's charging for it. What's he charging?
A cigarette,
which is a lot actually, because he doesn't. He's not interested in the chess set, And so now Ludwig gets a set of chess pieces. Look, he said, and shook the box like a noisemaker. Everything's Purim now. Claude smiled and coughed. The Litvak, he can kiss my backside. Charging to play chess. On the one hand, you can see why Claude's angry. On the other hand, I guess as we had read that story, what we're talking about when we talk about Anne Frank. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
It was part of the story was about the guy in the Holocaust, the guy who cuts the line, the guy who's a Holocaust survivor who has no principles, right? And what it's trying to say here is that, as one woman said it, if you were a person without virtue before the Holocaust, you were probably a person without virtue after the Holocaust. In other words, it didn't, often we make saints of, Holocaust survivors, and many, many, many of them were, but not all of them were. And, so this guy charges. Okay. Now, Ida's hair. Bottom of 190. Ida ran a hand through her hair. Her hair was as dense and dark as it had been 10 years earlier. When she had been captured, separated from the husband now known to be dead, O Shmuel, and forced to work in a munitions factory. Not labor camp, not escape from labor camp, not the death in her arms of her best friend, O Luba. Not recapture, not liberation, not going unwashed for weeks, not living on berries in the woods, not the disappearance of her menses for almost a year and their violent return, not influenza, lice, odors, suppurations, not the discovery in the forest of an infant's remains, a baby buried shallowly, dug up by animals, not the one rape and the many beatings. Nothing had conquered the springiness of her hair. So her hair is a symbol of...
Again, I have silence.
Oh, yeah, here you are. You're back. Her hair is the survival of the Jewish people.
Right.
What she's been through, right? Yeah. A rape, a beating, a this, a that, and they're coming at you like blows. Not that, and not that, and not that, and not that. You know, the repetition of not this blow and not this blow. But the truth is that we survived, and we're here to read Edith Perlman's story, right? Mm-hmm. And the hair that refuses not to curl, it springs up, you know, with life. Just so beautiful. Her hair.
What are lice odor suppurations?
I don't know, actually. Influenza, lice, odors, suppurations. I think it's four different things. Coming at you very straight, not even commas, right?
I think she has it strung together like that without commas, because she's saying all of these things happened at once, sort of. So it's like, not all of this crap.
Yeah, right. Her hair betrayed her expectance of happiness. And where would she find this happiness? Be'eretz, in the land. Milliners, she had been informed by the emissary of the underground, barely concealing his disgust. Emissary with a capital E, underground with a capital U. The way she's being treated by this, what she later calls this lout of a pioneer. He's part of the lice. The way she's being spoken to. I have to tell you something, just between the three of us, the four of us. I was teaching this story yesterday. You know, my mother is she was born in London, and during the war, what I didn't know actually is first the kids were evacuated to Bath, you know, to the country from the city, and then they were evacuated to Canada. And so, you know, she was how old was she? 7, 8, 9 years old when all of this is going on. So when I was teaching this story, my mother starts to cry. And at various times, she's been crying during these stories. But what was going on there, she was telling me, you know, how, you know, it's too close to home. And at the beginning, this was how Israelis treated Holocaust survivors, right? They didn't want to know from them. They didn't show respect to them. These were the Jews who were led like lambs to slaughter. They sort of blamed the victims, as it were. And it's part of a time in Israeli history when it's called Shlilat HaGolah, the negation of the diaspora. You know, all of those Jews there, you're a diaspora Jew. And that was a pejorative, because it meant you were skinny and pale and thin, and you weren't the new Jew who was strong and worked the land and so on. And that is the attitude that this little pisher is giving Ida. Milliners were not precisely what the land required. Do you think we wear chapeau while feeding our chickens? Gveret? Miss?
Why not?
Right. Perhaps you intend to drape our cows with silken garlands. Sitting on a wooden chair, hands folded in her lap, she told him that she would change careers with readiness, transform herself into a milkmaid till the fields draw water, shoot Arabs, blow up Englishmen. Then she leaned toward this lout of a pioneer. But if cities arise, Be'eretz, and commerce and romance, I'll make hats again. He looked at her for a long time. Then he wrote her name on his list. Now she was waiting for the summons. The summons?
Yeah, which is usually a negative.
But remember, it's Purim. So where is the summons happening?
Were they summoning the Jews to come somewhere? I can't remember.
Hey, it's the summons. You cannot go to the king's chamber without having been invited.
Right. Without being summoned.
Without being summoned, unless the king, you know, and if you do, you can die, or the king will put out his golden scepter and you will be welcomed into, right? So this is, the summons is on the one hand great because it's going to be how the Jews are saved. On the other hand, it may be Esther's, you know, last few moments. So this is not Esther, but this is our Esther person. Ida is the Esther of this story. Meanwhile, she typed applications for other persons. Bottom of 191, she typed an application translating from the Yiddish writing. Name, Morris Losowitz. Yes, she knew him as Mendel, but Morris was the proper anglicization. Age, 35. Yes, that was true. As opposed to all the other stuff, which may not be. Turn to the top of the next page. Occupation, electrical engineer. In Poland, he had taught in a cheder. Perhaps he knew how to change a light bulb. He's an electrical engineer, right? So this is a stretching of the truth, you know, a holy stretching of the truth. Language is spoken in order of fluency, Yiddish, Polish, Hebrew, English, strictly true. He could say, I want to go to America. So the application is a way of getting people, you know, to be housed and fed and so on. You know, if it takes a few white lies, you do it. Okay, Ida typed on. Her own overhead light bulb shook on its noose, right? Because her life is, you know, her life is still in danger. And we're going to find out that it's in danger, and it's going to be in danger because she's going to try to go to the land of Israel. And you could die on that journey. So the light bulb has a noose, you know, it's just everything is going to be on the line. Okay, 192 at the bottom. She was up and about now, gossiping somewhere. From beneath the bed, Ida dragged a sack and dumped its contents onto her own mattress. A silk blouse, silk underwear, sewing utensils, glue, and a Wehrmacht helmet battered and cracked. And cellophane. Cellophane wrappers. Dozens of cellophane wrappers. Hundreds of cellophane wrappers. Some crushed, some merely torn, some intact, slipped whole from the lucky strikes and camels that they had once protected. She began to work. What's she doing?
She's a milliner.
And she's making the Purim costume to end all Purim costumes. You know, the description of it is so beautiful. Let's just hold your finger at 193, but turn to... turn to 197. Sorry. 198. Was that woman Ida? Sonia had never before seen her in lipstick. She must have been hoarding it. And that brilliant red silk blouse? How come it wasn't dust? Ida blew a kiss to Sonia. Skip down just a little bit. Ida danced with the others. Her hat glistened in one part of the room, glowed in another. It was a heavy cloche with a narrow brim, and it was covered with hundreds of shining bows, or perhaps butterflies, or perhaps ecstatic, transparent birds. It caught the light of the candles, transforming that light into ruby twinkles, turquoise wings, flashes of green. Were they silk, those bows, butterflies, birds? Were they diamonds? Were they real winged creatures? Ida whirled by. Below the iridescent helmet, her hair. So do you see what happened? She used the helmet to make this gorgeous hat, right? Some curls damp and enticing, because she's going to entice, clung to her neck. We have guests. Okay, what is the nature of Ida's beautiful costume?
What do you mean, what is the nature?
Sonia's looking at it and she thinks, is it this? Is it what? What are the things that it could possibly be? Is it butterflies? Is it birds? Because she's dancing and she's flying and she is, you know, it's kind of foreshadowing. She will go on the wings of eagles to the land of Israel, right? And so here she is, you know, and her Purim costume draws the light, you know, draws the light because she is a light. And, you know, okay. And this is so funny. The person, there was a skit in one corner, Ida entered wearing a hat. Three men dragged an upright piano from the corridor. Although the orchestra had specified it did not require a piano, did not want a piano, certainly could not employ that piano, which was missing 17 keys. I thought this was beautiful. Okay, it's missing 17 keys, not 18 keys, because if it were missing 18 keys, that piano would be dead, right? But it's only missing 17. And if it's only missing 17, you can make it sing, right? So, you know, she's making her Purim costume sing with these pieces of cellophane taken off cigarette boxes. In other words, it's like making miracles with nothing. And, you know, it's magical. Just the whole idea of it. And that's what they're going to do with that piano, too, because there might be 17 missing keys, but there are plenty of keys that are still playing. Okay, one more thing, and we'll go back to 198 in a second, but go to 195. So Roland comes in, and she closed their door. She unbuckled his worn belt. She unbuttoned his flannel shirt. What color had it been originally? It had long ago faded to the yellowish Gruenwasser of his eyes. She Gruenwasser, right, with a capital, with a lowercase, right, with a lowercase, green eyes. This is okay, right? He unbuttoned the cuffs too, but did not attempt to remove the shirt. It was up to him whether he'd take it off. He was a sentient being, wasn't he? Was he? He had all the vitality of a corpse. You know, this is her beloved, but she still has a sense of humor about him. When she roughly rolled down his trousers and pulled them off and rolled down his undershorts and pulled them off, she saw that he was ready for her. When had they done this last? 3 months ago? 6? For them, as for the persons, one gray day got sucked into the next, right? So it's an anonymity of people. It's an anonymity of time. You know, time is gray and it just keeps going. Yet there were joys, you know. Letters from relatives thought dead. That's the revival of the dead. That's a miracle right there. Meet sometimes in the soup. And tonight, a party. I mean, just the idea of a Purim party in a DP camp, it could just start your crying right there. She stood and lifted her little black dress over her witch's body. Sonia, too, is a magician, right? She's able to run a DP camp on nothing. And she's able to procure a lot. Even if she can't get the tin milk, she's getting lots and lots of things. She left the dress lying on the floor, 196 on the top. She straddled Roland's erection, brushing him back and forth, side to side, until she felt a spurt of her own moisture. And he must have felt it too, for alert, he gripped her upper arms and turned them both over at once, as if they were a single animal, a whale in green flannel, maybe. She looked up at him. "Roland, I love you," she said, for the first time ever. And she did. She loved the whole silly mess of him, the effeminate softness of his shoulders, the loose flesh under his chin, the little eyes, the breath redolent of processed meats, the sparse eyebrows, the pudgy hands, the fondness for facts. Were these not things to love? Oh, and the kindness. He thrust, thrust. Ah, she said, and even in her pleasure, her witch's pleasure, she heard the stealthy opening of the door. She turned her head and met Ludwig's rodent gaze. Okay, what is, what happens when they're making love this time? They haven't made love in a long time, but.
They get interrupted, or I don't know if they stop, but she knows he's there.
Right. Yes. Go ahead.
I think she, I don't know if she's ever told him that she loved him before, but it seems like it's a deeper level.
Yeah. This is the first time. Right. This is the first time she's saying it, which means that was when she came to feel it. She, you know, she surprised herself. And then she looks at him and she says, were these things not to love? And you're hearing about pudgy this and soft this and so on. And what it reminds us is we don't love people before because they're beautiful. They are beautiful because we love them, right? You know, in the eyes of somebody who loves, you know, that face and that particular body doesn't matter. You know, they're the most beautiful thing in the world, right? And so, you know, so she sees him through those eyes. Oh, and the kindness, you know, and they're coming together like a whale in green flannel, maybe, but you know, that is also the miracle and the magic of sexual relationships where two human beings are become one for a few moments, right? By the time Roland and Sonia arrived at the Great Hall, a big room with a little stage, okay, they arrived. Go down to the bottom of the page. So we're hearing about Hanukkah this and Hanukkah that because they had stuff for Hanukkah. They didn't have candle holders for other things. So you use what you have. And now to the great moment. Ludwig and his uncle. The Black King and the White Queen, right? You know, the forces of evil and the forces of light and, you know, and their chess pieces, right? This is what they dress up as. King, queen, wise man, and the occasional hero, cigar stubs identified Churchill, the cigarette holder, Roosevelt. No one came dressed as Haman. Haman adorned the yellow walls, though. He was painted in green, painted in black tar. There were several Hamans in relief made from a sturdy papier-mâché. What is this stuff, Sonia asked the history teachers. The stars and stripes, pulped, he told her. Many Hamans were rendered feet up, head down. Everyone wore a little black mustache. So what's going on here? The history teacher wants to decorate the room for Purim. How's he going to do it? He's going to order paper mache so that he can make the flag, right? Stars and stripes, you know, and the military, which, you know. So in other words, like, he didn't request it for Purim, but he procured it for Purim. Mm-hmm. The orchestra flared, strummed. Persons danced, changed partners, danced again. Okay, now we're at it. So this is the radiance. 198 is the radiance of Ida. Yeah. Okay. Now we're there. 199. The noise increased. There was some yelling. Another skid. She saw Ida waltzing with the general. Ida looked up at him from under her hat. As they turned, Sonia saw an inquiring look on her lovely face. As they turned again, she saw the look turn into one of admiration. As they turned again, she saw the look become one of pleasure. She's fucking him, said Ludwig in English. He had taken off his Black King's barrel. He was seated on the bench beside her. He smelled of brandy. I am employing a metaphor, he explained. Oh my God. She's just unbelievable. Okay, so what
I think the whole use of Ludwig is really interesting in this story.
Oh, yes. So tell us, because we saw his rodent gaze before.
Well, but I mean, everything about Ludwig. Ludwig is the, is almost, you know, he doesn't quite fit in with everybody. So he's like the outsider, but not outsider, who's watching all of this and trying to process it in his own, you know, sort of not quite mature way.
Right.
And so it's all, it's sort of all jumbled, but yet he is getting the point.
Yes. Because Ludwig doesn't miss anything. There's something going on in Roland and Sonia's room. He's going to know what's going on because he knows everything that's going on. He's not going to miss what's going on because that has what served him well, you know, right. In order to, right? But Ida is dancing with the general, and what happens in that dance? Ida looked at him from under her hat. Sonia sees an inquiring look. This is the procurement happening, the ask. She turns it into one of admiration. This is now the flattery that's going to help get the ask. And they turned again, and she saw one of pleasure. He has now said yes, right? So our Esther, right, has asked something of the king. And the king says yes, right? But there will be a delay between the time she asks and when he makes good on the ask. And yet it will save the day in so many ways. So when Ludwig says she's fucking him, he was right, right? In terms of metaphorically, he got it to the T. The general mm-hmm. danced a two-step with Ida's cubicle mate, the little old lady who came alive at dusk. I'm on 200 at the top. He danced another waltz with Ida, the second time, right? And then 20 minutes later, Sonia and Roland and Ludwig and Ida and a dozen others stood to wave goodbye to the jeep carrying the three officers. The general touched his cap, handsome headgear, really, with all that gold insignia, but no match for Ida's. Mm-hmm. Sonia predicted the camp's rations would soon increase, but they did not. She hoped that Ida might get a private gift, silk stockings maybe, but nothing appeared. She even thought that that new immigration act would be rushed through the United States Congress. It was only a dance, shrugged Ida. Two dances, and you were ravishing. He's a soldier, Ida sighed. Not a king. Ida might be 35, and Sonia might be, you know, her late 50s, but Ida has seen it all, and she, but then something did happen, because that's what a miracle is, right? Something doesn't happen, and then out of blue, it happens. The allotment of cigarettes per person was officially increased, but it wasn't just the cigarettes, right? Because the augmented allotment was not to be distributed, the formal letter said, but to remain in the disposition of the directors. So people would keep getting their cigarettes, but what he did, what did the general do? He gave them currency to use at their disposition, you know, because getting anything through the bureaucracy it's not worth the paper they keep sending those memos on. But cigarettes, you could sell them. And that's what they do. And that's Sonia and the newly bearded Roland discovered was enough to change things significantly, to get butter, milk, greens, sanitary napkins, to buy a sow, which enraged some but fed others, the secular versus the Hasidim, to pay a glazier from the village to fix the broken windows. They're fixing the world. To procure gas for mendicant trips to Frankfurt, which resulted in more butter, milk, greens, and sanitary napkins. And finally, with the aid of a bundle of additional dollars contributed by Americans to enable a sizable group of persons to bribe way overland to Brindisi, where waited a boat bound for Haifa. One day, Mendel's wife, who had replaced Ida as the director's secretary, handed Sonia a letter. "We have reached Palestine," wrote Ludwig in Hebrew. we have been saved again. Let me recover and then let's talk. This is the miracle. It's butter. It's town, you know, it's sanitary napkins. And it is the bribe that gets Uncle Claude and Ludwig and Ida herself to the land of Israel. That is the miracle, right? And mm-hmm. And that is the Exodus from Egypt, right? Where we get out of Egypt so we can go to that promised land, and they make it to the promised land. And you know, and it's all because of that dance, right? That dance. It's Ida's request to the king. She is our Esther, and she does Purim again. And so Ludwig, who knows everything, when he says, "We have been saved again," you know, what's the again? Oh, you know, I had to hear the Purim story 15 times from you. So I know we've been saved once, but let me tell you, we've been saved again. And of course, you know, knowing the Holocaust, for anybody who made it to the land of Israel, they were saved again and again and again. You know, their lives could have been, you know, gone at any moment. So here it's a dance with the general. The Book of Esther, what is it? You know, she has to become his queen. You know, somebody said yesterday that the writer Anne Royfe wrote, a little crude, but nonetheless, Esther wasn't the first nor the last woman. Oh God, I'm gonna ruin it. But it's something about a woman on her back getting things for the Jewish people. You know, people say that that's what is implied in the Book of Esther. Maybe, okay. But the point is that, you know, this is where, you know, the sex, or the fuck, as Ludwig would say, does create a miracle, right? Does create a miracle. And, you know, and so many things. We have been saved again. Okay, there was just one last thing that I neglected to say, and it was, while I'm finding what it was, tell me other thoughts about this story.
Well, what I just heard you say has given me thought, where you said some people say Esther is like the Jewish people, they have to be screwed or kowtowed or something to get their freedom. Is that what you meant?
Not the Jewish people necessarily, but Jewish women. Right. Have to, you know, sometimes, you know, in pogroms we got, you know, we get raped. In this we get, you know, and I'm sure there were many survivors who had to, you know, exchange sex for, you know, a piece of bread or, you know, whatever it was. You know,
hashtag me too.
Yes,
right.
Really, really. So yeah, go ahead, Lynn.
I was just going to say, and certainly it, right or wrong, it was the case that for a very long time, people accepted that as inevitable.
Yes.
In other words, not that they thought it was something they wanted to do, not that they thought it was the right thing to do, but it was seen as an inevitable thing.
Right, right. And particularly, you know, particularly when your life is on the line, right? I mean, we're, mm-hmm. you know, we're in the Me Too, you know, we're talking about careers on the line and so on. And for the women who got sexually assaulted, you know, along the way, this is true as well. But here it's life and death, you know, it's to a different degree, I would say. Okay. The TB hospital was the Wehrmacht stable. The powerless witch. Okay. Well, I think we'll just, if it comes to me, I'll tell you next week. But so a Purim night is, you know, it's the medium is the message, right? You know, the event is the Purim story played out and also talked about. You know, it's where the message and what's happening are complementing each other.
What's the story for, what are we reading next week?
It's called The Coat.
Oh, The Coat, the next story.
And it's the third one of this trilogy, and we'll talk about how they fit together.
I will try to be here, but I have jury duty. Oh, so we'll see what happens.
We'll hope you get off.
And I will be traveling, but I don't want to miss it. Do you record these? Was there one way we could get that?
Yes. Today.